now.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Army Lieutenant General Jeff Sorensen, the Chief Information Officer of the Army. Lieutenant General Sorensen, thank you so much for joining us.
Jason, thanks very much, and glad to be on the show.
So you've been CIO since November 2007, which seems like such a short time when you came on, but if you think about it, we're pushing 2.5 years now. Discuss your tenure so far. What are some thoughts about it? Have you been surprised that you've been in this position for so long? Meaning, not that you're not doing a good job, per se, but the fact is, in the military, it seems like people get moved in and moved out fairly quickly.
So let me kind of address the last question first. Typically, this particular position, they look for someone to be here at least 3 years. My predecessor was here about 4 years and so forth, but you need to have that sort of tenure in order to come in with a vision, come in with some objectives, and essentially begin to put those objectives into reality. So the fact that I've been here almost 3 years, not completely surprising from the standpoint of the other particular assignments and senior leadership positions here in the Army, but it has gone very quickly. And when I look back on the 2.5 years as it is right now, thinking about the time when I first got asked to do this job, it was oh my goodness, I better really sit down and kind of take an assessment of what needs to be done. And that, quite frankly, was job one. And I think over the last 2.5 years, while we have not accomplished everything that maybe I had hoped to get done in the 2.5 years, as I think back to that time of 2007, we have at least accomplished some of it and certainly set the conditions for continued success.
And obviously, I know you're probably still in touch with the former General Boutelle, who was your predecessor. I'm sure he's given you some advice. A lot of people know about the Army and the mission of the Army, obviously support the warfighter. But as CIO, I mean, really, your job is really wide-ranging in terms of what you do and how you do it. I mean, we'll talk a little bit later, but you would go to Afghanistan, you go to Iraq, you go to other places in theater to talk to them about technology. So let's start with a big, broad question of how do you as CIO really support that wide-ranging mission?
So the wide-ranging mission that we have in CIOG6 is predominantly around providing network support for the soldier, whether he is at his post-campus station, whether he's deployed into an area of operations or whatever, as well as looking over how is the Army making its IT investments, basically the governance structure, overall, if you will, enterprise architecture. So it's all the same type of functions that a corporate CIO would have. But at the same point in time, we now have a customer base that's very much different than anybody else in terms of the industry norm. But yes, I have traveled through the globe. I've gone off to see our soldiers who are deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan. I've seen them in terms of exercises here in Germany, Pacific, Korea, continental United States, just to witness what they do to get a better appreciation for how is it as the CIOG6 are we basically providing them what they need to do their job, as well as what do we need to do differently in order for them to do their job.
What challenges does that bring you as the corporate CIO or Army-wide CIO to address when you start talking to the combatant commanders from an IT perspective? I mean, is it a policy and a standards issue, or is it actually a technology issue where some combatant commanders have up-to-date technology, and other ones are still running COBOL?
So I don't think it's so much that as it is from the standpoint of when they're functioning in an area of operation, the network is there to support whatever the operational commander wants to do. So it's basically an enabler of whatever his particular capability is he wants to affect there in that area of operation. What we do in terms of enterprise-type services is try to get the Army and ultimately the Department of Defense on some sort of common basis by which we are all, in many cases, functioning in the same way. We talk about email as a service at some point in time as a Department of Defense, only because today, you have the Army's got its network and its email process, the Navy's got theirs, the Marine Corps has theirs, and consequently, just as an example this morning, I got an email from a friend that was trying to contact a Marine. The easiest way for me to get that email is to send an email message to my counterpart, George Allen, who is the C-4 director for the U.S. Marine Corps, and say, by the way, can you somehow locate this guy in your global access list so I can give it to my buddy? I mean, that's the issue we're having right now. And quite frankly, we are going to fight joint, so we're going to have to learn how to operate joint. And operating joint, we need to get to more enterprise capability.
All right, a little tease for the future, our future conversation about the priorities. But before I do that, we talked a little bit about the combatant commanders. And you mentioned just briefly about your visits in, to troops in theater, Iraq, Afghanistan. How often do you go? What do you learn from that? Give us some sense about your experience in theater.
I typically, on an annual basis, go see every particular, you know, if you will, combatant command area. I mean, either whether it's in Iraq or Afghanistan, I certainly visit the UCOM, AFRICOM, PACOM, U.S. Forces Korea, certainly within CONUS, I see Commander Forcecom. So each one of those combatant command or senior leaders, I visit on an annual basis. And when I go there to visit them, it's kind of a sensing, as I said before, of these are the things we're focusing on. These are our major objectives. This is what we're attempting to do, and then get their feedback of what their needs are. But it's primarily a sensing session for me to get from them what their needs are. I will tell you, in all cases, I always come back after visiting, not so much with the senior mission commanders, but certainly the signal soldiers that are in that area of operation, how well it is that we're doing with our training down that takes place at Fort Gordon, the types of equipment, whether or not it's functioning properly, what other sort of needs that they have in terms of resourcing from an equipment standpoint or whatever the case may be, that I'd then bring back to the department. An example would be, as we found out with units that were deploying to Afghanistan and Iraq, that in many cases to support current operations, they were having to buy a lot of, if you will, external, if you will, COTS IT. In other words, Tannenberg VTCs, they were buying Harris 7800 radios, only to sort of meet mission need. Those were capabilities that they were buying out of Hyde as opposed to being resourced from the department level. And so we brought that back and then put that into normal process to essentially establish that as a requirement such that the department would begin to resource it as opposed to if you're the individual divisions, brigade, combat teams doing that on their own.
And I know the Apps for the Army contest, which again we'll talk about later, that was an idea that came from someone in the theater too. Have you had some of the other ideas put into one that maybe a recent idea or a recent visit that's kind of sprung an idea for the future?
The Apps for the Army is probably the best one. The one that I just spoke to about getting the COTS equipment, which in many cases is nothing more than commercial off-the-shelf capability, that they were finding there was a need for, and they were buying it on their own nickel and dime from operational funds as opposed to being provided by the department. But the Apps for the Army was, again, a very similar instance where I saw something in theater where soldiers were putting capability into the force, but doing so at a great expense to them, not only in time and effort, but in many cases bureaucratic hurdles that they had to overcome. So within every visit, there's always some nugget that comes back that we come back and we kind of say, you know, we can do this a little bit better. Let's change. Let's adapt. And let's do better in the future.
Kind of makes you want to go visit people more often, I would bet. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Apps for the Army. We're going to talk about some of the other priorities, enterprise-wide email. But you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Lieutenant General Jeff Sorensen, the Army Chief Information Officer.
Data is exploding in growth, usage, and retention. Count on it, and count on Vion to manage your organization through that change. Vion's file service solutions allow you to manage all platforms with an integrated management approach. This enables you to consolidate, protect, search, and archive unstructured data. With powerful technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion will help you regain control of your IT environment. To learn more about Vion's file services, visit Vion.com. That's Vion.com. When it comes to your company's disaster recovery, business continuity, and virtualization plans, ask the experts. Vion Corporation. With a 29-year track record in assured computing, Vion puts customer needs first as a hardware and systems integrator. With a team of dedicated engineers and powerful technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion's customers know their data is protected, secure, and recoverable. Visit Vion.com to learn more about high-performance network-attached storage and content archiving. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Lieutenant General Jeff Sorensen, the Army Chief Information Officer. Now, Lieutenant General Sorensen, before break, we talked a lot about the setup of your office in many ways, how you support the Army's mission. Let's talk about some of your priorities over the next 6 or 9 months. You gave us a little bit of a glimpse, so fill us in more.
So over the next few months, we are continuing to do what I call the four big rocks here for what we have termed the Global Network Enterprise Construct, GNEC. And those four big ones are getting out the RFP for the enterprise email and getting that on award in FY10 so that we can begin to establish an enterprise email for certainly the Department of Army that then becomes the precursor for establishing an enterprise email for the Department of Defense that ultimately DISA will run. So that's one big rock. Second big rock is essentially our effort right now to get to an RFP, request for proposal, on the area processing centers. This is not only something that we've been at for a period of time to try to get at, but most recently, OMB has provided some direction that we need to consolidate a lot of data centers. So we are right in line with doing that, and essentially that's the second big one that we're after. And again, an award here in FY10 for that as well. The third one is something that I will basically take a part of, which is next week, is we call it the GNIC OpVal 2. So that's the Global Network Enterprise Contract Operation Validation 2. We did one last year, where we took a brigade out of Fort Bragg and we deployed it into, in this case, the Auster Challenge 09 exercise, which took place in Europe. And we did it on a virtual basis. Now, this year is going to be different because we are now taking a brigade combat team, fires brigade, out of Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and physically deploying into the area of operation for Auster Challenge 10, and doing it in a manner such that the cloud computing apparatus through the area processing center, that they can get their data, they can get their application, they'll be in a single forest for email. They'll essentially be able to function in this future vision that we have of how soldiers can deploy, and the network will be there to support them as opposed to the way it is today, that basically they deploy and they have to take the network with them. And then the fourth big rock is our continual deployment of what we call the 6+1 tools. So the plus one is a consolidation of our Active Directory. Today, if you ask the people down at 9th Signal Army Netcom, they tell you that the Army right now has about 17 forests and a few rogues that they've been able to find. But collapsing them into two forests, one for essentially email and one for data, allows us to get to a more consolidated operational base and build out an enterprise, as well as the other tools such as host-based security system and so forth. We're now going to standardize those as a part of the Army to essentially get those deployed everywhere so that whether you're a TNOSC out in the Pacific, or which is a Theater Network Operations Security Center, or a TNASC in Europe, you are essentially viewing the network in a similar fashion as opposed to today where we have, you know, everybody was buying their own tool and looking at the network independently, and we never had a common view of exactly what we were looking at. So those four big rocks are huge objectives. From the chief's perspective, we have, I would say, another task, try to resynchronize the future strategy for just the network itself. He commonly refers to as the network in a comparison of the Big Five, which I kind of came into the Army with, which was the Patriot missile system, the Bradley fighting vehicle, the Abrams, the Apache helicopter, and the Patriot anti-air missile system. But he says, you know, in the future, the Big Five is really network. And so along those lines, we have four major lines of operation that we're functioning on right now. One is to determine a better policy of doing requirements definition. You know, how do we get to assimilating and bringing in COTS technology on a more frequent basis as opposed to the time we take today to develop an IT system and put it in the field? So that's line of operation one. Line of operation two is figuring out a different way to do software development and deployment, much like we're talking about with the apps of the Army. We want to emulate what industry does. And in that manner, we are working to define an operating environment across the different domains, everything from a data center to a tactical operations center, to what the soldier uses, to what is in the vehicles, to what essentially functions with unmanned sensors. Define those operating environments, essentially nail that down, and have the acquisition czar, in our case Dr. O'Neill, put out an acquisition decision memorandum that says from now into the future, this is how we're going to basically use operating environments to define software development. And it's analogous to what we're doing here with the apps for the Army. You know, allowing, if you will, third-party vendors, now that we've determined what that operating environment to be, to essentially build out apps and put those and build those into things that we need and do it in a much more rapid fashion. And then the third line of operation is basically doing a better evaluation of our testing of our systems, an end-to-end test, because today we have testing capability, whether it's down at Fort Hood, Fort Bliss, the Signal Center, Fort Monmouth, but we can't really do an end-to-end test of how are we tying together all aspects of the network. And so those are three big efforts here that we have if you will, from a policy and strategy point, to really reshape the network for the future.
You got a lot on your plate. So let me start with some of the big, you mentioned the two big words there, RFP. Okay, that's three words. But that gets the ears perking, especially in industry, who I know are big listeners and very excited. So let's talk about the RFPs. Start with enterprise email. You said you want to get that out and awarded in 2010. When are we looking for an RFP, and where should people look for it, FedBizOps versus one of your many Army multiple award contracts?
We had put out a draft RFP back in March. We had an industry day. We got a lot of commentary back for it. We've reshaped the request for proposal. And our intent is to get it out here, best that I understand here, about mid-May, to essentially award, if you will, by the end of the year. The other particular request for proposal is on area processing centers. That, too, will be coming out in May with the intent to award here by the end of the year. But both of those are focused on getting to enterprise activity, both from the standpoint of how we basically function and collaborate and send messages, as well as how we're going to pre-stage data and applications.
And should people look for those through FedBizOps or through another vehicle?
Yeah, it is all through FedBizOps. I mean, we are communicating that way from the standpoint of where we are, what we've been doing, and where the awards intend to be.
All right, so there's two things I'll probably follow up with you in May on. But let me jump to the other third piece of this, which is the GNEC OPVAL2, which is a great Army acronym that you helped explain. Now, this is actually going to be different than the first one, which I guess you did last year. When's that going to take place? And you talk about it's basically testing the future of what the Army will look like in terms of deploying technology, taking the network with them. Talk about what you learned maybe from last year and how you're applying it to this year's exercise.
This is an exercise to take place here the first part of May. And what we did last year was we're trying to establish what are the tactics, techniques, and procedures for this thing called a network service center. So a network service center is essentially three components. It's the fixed regional hub, which essentially provides the transport piece. It is the use of area processing centers to pre-stage data and applications and make that, if you will, kind of a cloud-type application. And the third part of it was the net ops, the network operations, through our theater network operations security centers. How do we connect everything coming in from the gig all the way down to the foxhole? So what we learned last year was we had some issues with respect to technical architecture in terms of how we were actually being able to pass digits. We had some lessons learned in terms of how these particular applications, such as Command Post of the Future, would function in a cloud environment. From an operational standpoint, we had some issues with respect to, in terms of the network operations, who had the control, and how is that control basically exercised. And I would say from a training perspective, it was all about trust. I mean, in many cases, you know, you have a senior mission commander who in the past has been very comfortable with loading up his data on his servers, packing his servers, and moving them out because he knew he had it. In this case, we're saying, look, man, don't worry about it. Trust us. Take your laptop, move to the forward edge of where the battlefield is, plug it in, and your network and your data is going to be there. And working through and the training that took place to get that done was significant. So all those lessons learned are essentially a fundamental precept for doing what I consider to be, at this point in time, the final dress rehearsal, because our chief of staff has essentially given us a basic dictate that he wants to see a unit deploy into the area of operations that is either Iraq or Afghanistan in FY11 using this capability and this concept as opposed to the way they deploy today. So this is more or less our final dress rehearsal to kind of get at the network service center and all its piece parts and making sure that we have our tactics, techniques, and procedures done properly and doctrinally to show how this functions so that when we prepare the unit to deploy in FY11 in terms of really deploying into an area of operation, it will work and it will work well.
All right, that's exciting. I know, I think that's something, if you're getting the mandate to get it done for 2011, this is a big one, so something else for me to follow up with you on. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about apps for the Army and maybe some other things. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Lieutenant General Jeff Sorensen, the Army Chief Information Officer.
Data is exploding in growth, usage, and retention. Count on it. And count on Vion to manage your organization through that change. Vion's file service solutions allow you to manage all platforms with an integrated management approach. This enables you to consolidate, protect, search, and archive unstructured data. With powerful technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion will help you regain control of your IT environment. To learn more about Vion's file services, visit Vion.com. That's Vion.com. When it comes to your company's disaster recovery, business continuity, and virtualization plans, ask the experts. Vion Corporation. With a 29-year track record in assured computing, Vion puts customer needs first as a hardware and systems integrator. With a team of dedicated engineers and powerful technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion's customers know their data is protected, secure, and recoverable. Visit Vion.com to learn more about high-performance network-attached storage and content archiving. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Lieutenant General Jeff Sorensen, the Army Chief Information Officer. Now, Lieutenant General Sorensen, we talked a lot about your priorities. We talked about the Area Processing Centers, Enterprise Email. We talked about the Global Network Enterprise Construct. So you have a lot going on. One of the things we haven't talked too much about was Apps for Army, and I'd love to get a status check. How many people are developing apps? Give us a latest of what's happening.
We launched this on the 1st of March, and this is essentially a partnership that we've established with DISA, the Defense Information System Agency, to essentially use their RACE contract, the Rapid Access Computing Environment, by which we could develop, if you will, almost like an Apple iPhone store type storefront for people to go in there and develop apps for the Army. So what we've done with the Forge.mil site that they have on the at the DISA race contract there is essentially enable mobile emulators such as an Apple iPhone, a BlackBerry, an Android. Got the Linux server stood up there. We've essentially created an environment by which all the operating environments that I spoke to earlier are essentially located in this Forge.mil site, where soldiers and civilians, now we've basically only given this to soldiers and civilians, they can go and develop applications, anything from career management to a battlefield command application or whatever. To date, we've got about 96 entries, of which it's almost about half and half between, if you will, military and civilian. But what I found to be exciting is I've got everybody from a Spec 4 to a lieutenant colonel. I've got every component in the Army, whether it's active duty, reserve, U.S. Army Reserve, National Guard. You know, we've got everybody sort of participating in here. And we opened it up on the 1st of March. They've developed their applications in terms of wanting to do something. They're in the process of developing and setting forth their application on this site. Then the 15th of May, we'll about close this out. We'll do an evaluation, and then at the Land War Net conference that will take place in Tampa this year, not Fort Lauderdale, but in Tampa, we will make the award there to the respective civilians and military. And the interesting thing about this one, other than other previous contests, is we actually worked through the legal authority so that we could reward the military with money this time, as opposed to just an award. In many cases, it's a medal.
96 entries. Is that about what you expected? Is that more? Is that less? Did you have any preconceived notions?
Well, we didn't know, so we essentially limited it to 100, and so we're at the limit, and we're excited about this because ultimately we want to take what we learned here in terms of how do we afford people an opportunity to do this, how do we get through the certification accreditation process, and how do we then get others to use it, to essentially take advantage of it, such that ultimately we can export this to industry as well. We want to get them to participate, but we're still working on that business model to essentially determine how can we get industry excited about building these applications. Because unlike the iPhone, where you can download a lot of apps that are free, I don't think we're going to have a lot of industry counterparts wanting to develop applications for the Army just so we can download them for free.
Yeah, I'm not sure why, the whole money thing. But one thing that's interesting that you mentioned earlier in our discussion is one of the ways you're looking at developing software in the future, and this is one of the models that you're looking at, will the lessons learned from Apps for Army translate directly into that decision memorandum that is on the way? And when should we see a decision memorandum roughly?
So we are all about trying to get to this common operating environment, as I spoke to. And yes, the apps for the Army will essentially inform how we get at that and how we can get past the certification and accreditation process. But our intent is to get this, and this is one of the four prototypes that we have actively participating in this framing of the common operating environment with the intent of getting an acquisition decision memorandum signed out by Dr. O'Neill, the acquisition executive for the Army, sometime here about the August timeframe. But that's the goal. And so, yes, this is informing it. I think we'll see how this plays out, but I do see this as the way for the future.
You mentioned one of four pilots. Can you talk about what the other three are?
Sure. So we have a pilot here with essentially PEO IWS with DCXA, where they are essentially doing a testing of an upgrade to what we call DCXA, the software that the intelligence folks use, and testing only certain interfaces as opposed to the type of testing we do today, which is testing the whole application. So that's one particular prototype. Can we understand how to do that, and can we get that to a point that we're comfortable that certification can be just done on specific interfaces that change? The second one is with PEO C3T, Command Control Communications Tactical, and that is essentially, if you will, taking and developing a software development kit for the Battle Command Capability Stack, Battle Command Common Service Stack, rather. And that is, again, to test out this whole notion of developing software development kits and how does that enable people to develop applications for that particular, in this case, that Battle Command application. And the other one, besides the apps for the Army, we're doing with JPO for biological defense to test out some ways of using more web hosting and web deployments such that we can get to a point that we can do this as a service. So all those are kind of involved with shaping, if you will, what we intend to do on this common operating environment so that the ADM that Dr. O'Neill signs out has enough specificity to explain to industry what we're trying to get at.
And lastly, your background a little. Now, you've been CIO since November 2007. Obviously, no one grows up and says, I want to be CIO. A lot of people grow up and say, I want to join the Army, I want to join the Marines, be in the military. Talk about how did you get to become CIO? Where did you start in your early part of your career? And if you can address your future, what's that hold?
So it's really difficult to determine how it is I was selected to be the CIO G6. When I go back to my background, I mean, unlike most Army officers, I've served in at this point now three different branches in two different functional areas. So I started out in the artillery, I then transferred to the Military Intelligence Corps. I became an operations research analyst after going to graduate school, began to do some work in acquisition, and then found myself being asked to be the CIO for the Department of Army. So to say that there was any sort of model there that someone can continue to follow in the future, I would say that would probably be rather risky. But I think in the end game, you know, what maybe I brought to the table was a lot of acquisition background, because where I had some expertise in acquisition was managing military intelligence systems and managing large deployments of, in this case, the Army's Night Vision Program. And so I think there was a thought that maybe applying some of those acquisition skills to what we were trying to do here within the department in terms of focused on the future network, that there was probably a linkage there that made it happen. But I think at the end of the day, I couldn't do what I do would it not be for the fact that I have an absolute superb staff that works very hard every day, and in many cases a lot more technically based than I am. But I mean, it just is because of them that we've had the opportunity to achieve the success we have.
All right, I know we could probably go on for another 30 minutes, but unfortunately we're out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Lieutenant General Jeff Sorensen, the Army Chief Information Officer. Lieutenant General Sorensen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jason. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and best of luck.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.